Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Well, I love getting the experts on the show. Our next guest is the expert on Arizona State athletics. He's been there for a couple of decades covering the Sun Devils. He's been all over this Herm Edwards, ASU, NCAA investigation. Fallout coming down the pipeline today as Arizona State, 2.5 years after the start of the investigation, finally getting some clarity. Chris Cartman joining us now from sundevilsource.com. Chris, I appreciate you making time, man. What took so long? Why 2.5 years? Gosh.
Yeah, hey, John. It was the number of recruits and coaches that were involved in this thing for ASU. So there were, according to my sources, more than 30 recruits who visited ASU impermissibly during the COVID dead period. And there are no fewer than 8 people who worked for ASU football who were involved in this. And if you compare that to the cases that people are familiar with, Tennessee, Michigan, Air Force had one, the COVID dead period, there's a few others, none of them involved more than a half dozen recruits. And so you have to basically interview all these kids, their family members who may have gone with them on these visits, and then you got the coaches and lawyers and all this stuff. And then also, really sort of unfortunately, the lead investigator in the case, Mark Strothkamp, for the NCAA, he died in the middle of the investigation, which then created an additional sort of process of them sort of switching over who was in charge of it. So all of those things and then other factors, I'm sure, were contributing to what let this turn into a nearly three-year investigation.
The team last year accepted a self-imposed bowl ban. It was hard for Kenny Dillingham because, you know, his crew had nothing to do with anything that happened. But, you know, he bit the bullet and did that. What penalties were handed out today, or what do you know about the announcement today or what Arizona State was informed of?
Yeah, so ASU has been taking self-imposed penalties all the way back to December, at least December of 2021. Herm Edwards and Antonio Pierce were not allowed to go on the road recruiting in December and January of December of that 2022 recruiting cycle. And then there were punishments that were taken from then, just probably not as aggressively as they should have been, related to scholarship reduction and a limit in the number of official visits and times during which unofficial visitors could be on campus. And then also there were contact restrictions, like certain weeks that ASU coaches were not permitted to have contact with recruits. And these penalties have been going on, as I said, there for over 2 years, and continuing on into January of this year. ASU coaches did not go on the road for 1 week recruiting in January, and then in February they had 1 week where they did not, where they were not allowed to contact recruits digitally. And then moving forward, the only remaining penalties are a few more weeks this spring into the summer of no contact with recruits and a few more weeks of no visits on campus with recruits. And beyond that, there are no recruiting restrictions whatsoever. And then in addition, another penalty is they have one more scholarship that's reduced this fall. So they'll be not able to have more than 84 players on scholarship. Mm-hmm. They had scholarship reductions of, I believe, 7 over the prior 2 years as well. So most of these things were done quietly and kind of by themselves. And we had done some reporting on some of these things. I just don't think that it permeated too widely to enough of the public. But that's sort of the situation. And then they have probation for 4 years starting on April 15. But probation in and of itself is not penalizing. It simply is if you commit additional penalties during the probationary period, those are viewed as aggregating by the NCAA infractions committee.
Give me an idea, when we see vacated wins, what are we talking about?
Oh, yes, and that's a good point, because they had 8 wins vacated from 2021, all of the wins in that season. They had used players that were recruited impermissibly in games, one or more players. And then in 2022, after Herm Edwards stepped down, Sean Juano took over and ASU beat Washington and Colorado, and both of those wins are also vacated. So it's a total of 10 vacated wins over a 2-season period.
Not that 70-0 or 70-7 victory.
Yeah.
That's the one they get to hang on to.
That stands. The all-time largest margin of victory in Territorial Cup history is retained by ASU because it did not use any players who had been recruited impermissibly.
I would have to think that would be important to some people in the rivalry.
Well, actually, of all of my tweets today, which included a bunch of breaking news about, and by the way, Herm Edwards is going to get, he's getting a show cause penalty of at least 3 years. I'm hearing it maybe more than that, but I can report that it's at least 3 years. I'm trying to get the exact length reported out. But of all the things that I tweeted today with the vacated wins and the penalties and Michael Crow and Ray Anderson type stuff, nobody, the ASU fans were most excited by the fact that the 70-7 win remains. Yes.
Chris Cartman with us, sundevilsource.com. The general sentiment among fans, is it a sigh of relief? Is it glad it's over? What did fans say as the news came out today?
I think the fans are largely confused and frustrated due to how opaque the process is, right? I mean, they wanted to know the same thing you asked. Why did this take so long, 3 years? Why at other schools it happens so quickly? Why do we not get exactly what happened today? And why is this fair to punish ASU for the last few years and then ongoing when this, a lot of this stuff is now legal, basically. You can pay players. So if players can get NILs by collectives who work closely with schools, and now you have legislation that's passing that's allowing the schools to negotiate directly on players' behalf with NIL, then why is it so bad that ASU hosted kids during the COVID dead period, comparatively? I think that's the big frustration is a lot of ASU fans feel like even though maybe what ASU did was technically wrong, it wasn't that much more wrong or even wrong at all in the grand scheme of things relative to what's happening at other schools or what now is allowed.
I'm looking at Michael Crow. We've talked a lot about presidents and chancellors over the last year or so, but you had some really good reporting on that front. Crow, I think, initially had come out and sort of maintained that Herm didn't know anything. What did you find out about Michael Crow's knowledge of what was going on?
So I got to be careful about how I word this. Basically, 8 months after the NCAA investigation started in early June of 2021, Michael Crow went on the radio in 98.7 locally, and he said that while Herm was responsible for the everything that kind of goes on in the program, he wasn't personally involved in the infractions, recruiting infractions, and the people that were are no longer part of the program. And he was referring to the guys that had lost their job, which, that was Antonio Pierce, Zach Hill, Adam Brenneman, Chris Hawkins, and Prentice Gill. And he strongly voiced support for Herm Edwards and said that he was doing a very good job. Mm-hmm. And the problem, though, is that at this point in time, for months already, ASU had been on the infractions investigation Zoom interviews with with recruits who had been on ASU's campus during the COVID dead period. And some of those recruits and others had already told the NCAA that Herm Edwards had participated and was involved in the recruiting infraction. So the reality is that either Crow knew because people in ASU's athletic department knew and they are responsible for reporting up the chain, you know, the emails about what's going on. So either he knew or he absolutely should have known. And whether that's willful ignorance or whether that is, not running your operation well, I don't know. But it's either one of those two things or he was dishonest about it. And I lean more toward thinking that it's hard to imagine that he didn't know that this was going on, because I reported the exact same day after his interview on the radio a bunch of the specific details about what Herm Edwards did, specifically that he met with a certain recruit at a certain location in Paradise Valley along with other coaches who were there and a bunch of other details. So if I know that on the day that Crow is saying this, the idea that he wouldn't is sort of far-fetched. And even if true, it still would indicate that he's not doing his job responsibly.
Chris, let me ask you, do you think, or in the course you're reporting, do you obviously will gather sort of some opinions, but why do you think Herm and his staff acted the way they did? Were they willfully trying to get an edge? Did they just think, this is no big deal, probably everybody else is doing it? Did you get a sense of maybe what motivated them as they, seemingly steamrolled the NCAA's rule?
Absolutely. Great question. And yes, I talked to then and even continuing on more recently, a number of the members of the staff, right? And the overall gist is that they were privy, they claim to be privy to knowledge that the recruits that they were targeting were also visiting a number of other schools. And their sentiment was, hey, we don't want to be at a competitive disadvantage. A lot of schools are breaking the rules in the COVID dead period. And so we felt like to not lose a competitive advantage, maybe we should be doing that as well. And obviously that's proved to have, destroyed a lot of careers, because a bunch of other guys are getting extended show cause penalties. Young coaches aren't going to be in coaching in college football for a lot of years. I mentioned Prentice Gill, Chris Hawkins, Anna Brenneman. They were all young, up and coming, under 30 guys that were on the rise. So for the staff to have this sort of a perception and then have it just blow up so stupendously in their face is really something. And the reason that it blew up, and I don't know that a lot of people know this either, there was infighting in ASU staff where some coaches didn't like other coaches, and that ultimately led to somebody who worked for ASU football becoming a whistleblower and providing information to ASU and to the NCAA, including screenshots of texts or emails that were taken from ASU's football offices as part of the evidence in alerting ASU and the NCAA to the violations. So this all stemmed from, this was all self-inflicted wound that people who worked at ASU who were so upset with other people that worked at ASU and unhappy with, the cheating that was taking place, that they decided they were going to alert to this, to the NCAA and ASU. And then that's what led to the complete unraveling of ASU football.
Chris Cartman with us, SunDevilSource.com. I want to pivot a little bit. There have been some players at Arizona State, Jaden Rashada. I don't know if he's officially in the portal yet, but said to be entering the portal. Also, you look at You know, the wide receiver position Badger. And, you know, how is that going over with fans? Because I know, you know, the fan bases at Oregon State and Washington State are disenchanted when they see players get in the portal. What's the fan base at Arizona State, their reaction when they see that?
Yeah, it's extremely frustrating. The first few days of the portal opening were totally uneventful for ASU, but then the Rashada thing hit like a bomb. He was such a highly regarded, prized quarterback signee. Started the first two games last year, true freshman, started right out of the gate, right? And the Elijah Badger news is that's a huge hit. I mean, he was a all-conference caliber wide receiver, 135 catches over the last two seasons, over 1,500 receiving yards. The reality, though, is college football has become free agency. And you have, I've been told that there are NIL collectives that support other schools that are reaching out to many prospects that are on, or players that are on other teams' rosters, to try to alert them to how much that they would be willing to pay them if they transfer. And I don't know, within the current structure, any way of preventing these types of things, given the rules being what they are now. And that makes it really hard for a place like ASU to reliably keep some of its highest profile players, because, I mean, look, ASU's NIL has improved quite a lot under Kenny Dillingham, and now it's at least decent, but it's decent for the Big 12. It's not competing with the top 10 to 15 schools in the country, certainly. Probably not even really close. And there's data that is provided by Open Doors, which is a company that facilitates a lot of NIL deals, and they provide the information to the collectives. And the data shows that the amount of money that an average top 25 program quarterback or wide receiver or linebacker makes relative to what happens at ASU is night and day difference. It's like a 4 or 5 to 1 difference. And the Pac-12, this will interest you, John, but the Pac-12 completely pales in comparison to the Big 12 in terms of the amount of money that players make in football and in men's basketball. It's like a 3 to 1 advantage for the Big 12 in the reporting period, which concluded, I believe, in the 2023 season. So you're not going to overcome that in today's version of college athletics, but for a greater effort by the businesses and boosters that support athletics at a particular university.
And that's hard when you're losing players, because, you know, that Sun Angel Collective will do a nice job and it's got a big alumni base, but, you know, when it's seeing players get in the portal, I talk to the donors around the conference, and they, you know, there's an exhaustion that they have in seeing players leave because it feels helpless. But the truth is, the reaction that the schools really need is for people to jump in there and be enthusiastic and supportive. It's a tough thing. Chris Cartman is with us, SunDevilSource.com. Before I let you go, Hines Ward, he joins Kenny Dillingham's staff. You kind of foreshadowed a big signing. You know, is he recruiting? Is he able to get into some living rooms and help get some players?
Well, relationships are everything, right? And so Hines Ward, his NFL connections, they translate from a recruiting standpoint. So people that he knew at that level or still at that level, front office, former players, teammates, whatever – their families and extended networks are going to be impressed by the opportunity to go play for somebody like Hines Ward at Arizona State. And so, yes, I do anticipate really pretty shortly, actually, I can't say who, but a 4-star wide receiver to commit to ASU, somebody who's very highly regarded. He'll be ASU's highest ranked commitment, I believe, since Jaden Rashada. So that puts into perspective the significance of it. And really, it's ASU was already an option, but when Hines Ward was given that job, it basically moved ASU right to the front of the line.
This is fascinating. You do such a good job. 2 decades there doing it. I don't know when you started, Chris, if you thought, hey, I'll do this for the next 20 years, but you're doing a really nice job covering that program. And I think, you know, part of it is that, you know, you're on it, you're sourced, you're talking to people. I really appreciate you joining us.
Thanks a lot, John.
Chris Karpman, if you're not already following him, you should be. Arizona State, sundevilsource.com. He is on it as it pertains to the Devils. Leave it here.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.